Welcome back to Disney Dependent. I'm Sarah Chilcutt.
And I'm like a skinny Indian guy. Indian, like the dot, not the feather. And he's wearing really tight kind of underwear bottoms. It kind of looks like a diaper. And he's on a pole. Woo!
I don't even want to know where this is going. All I know is everything in me was trying not to burp into the microphone just now. I said, I'm Sarah Chilcutt. And then my throat went,
Is your sound cutting out? Because I keep doing that.
Nope.
No.
Don't move. Okay, no one breathe.
We're fine.
Now you know what I've been going through.
But maybe just don't shoot yourself across the room again. Yeah,
that might have something to do with it.
So James is currently plugged in to the double prong thing that we usually, Ash and I are on.
Yeah.
And it cuts out pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he gets to experience what's going on right now.
And I get to
If you get wiggle wormy, if you get some ants in your pants and you move too much, cuts right out.
Yeah. And Ash said,
well, that's
now
why
you
I
get to
have
know
the one
how
that's
it
not.
Feels.
But I'm the wiggle worm.
But then she said, what did she say? Fuck you, Macmillan.
Yeah, fuck you, Macmillan. Ashley says this shit to me all the time. Usually, if you call me by my last name, you're either telling me to get my shit together or to man up.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Like, man up, Macmillan.
It's funny because my son went by Chilcutt the whole time he was playing soccer.
Right.
And I started calling him that. Yeah. I don't now.
My friend David Soderbergh?
Yeah.
His dad, Paul Soderbergh, used to call David Soderbergh.
That's funny.
I mean, yeah. All of those years I knew him.
I think that's a pretty typical dude thing.
It's pretty cute, too. But I like it. It's adorable.
Yeah, it is cute.
Are you guys hot as a mother F in here?
No, I've been freezing for like the last week.
I have some like middle-aged woman menopause thing happening.
Mm.
He's experiencing the change.
I keep getting hot flashes where I'm like, woo! Like an old southern woman and I have to fan myself off because I get too heated.
You have to fan yourself off?
Off. It's a sexual thing to fan myself off.
Well, I've been hot for months now.
Yeah.
I have not been cold, which is very not like me. I'm always freezing. And the last few months, I've just been very, very warm. And I've been thinking, I wonder if that's part of the change. And then the last week or so,
go back to being cold.
I have been freezing.
Well, it's been cold.
Josh brought me socks. Because he could tell that I was cold. He could see that I was cold. He brought me socks and put them on my feet.
Husband sensed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hear something off in the distance.
Thank God. This just in, it's 44 and crappy at not Disneyland.
And it's 64 and sunny at Disneyland. Speaking of the weather here, we have the snowpocalypse coming our way, apparently.
Yeah.
Is it right in time for when Ashley and I are moving? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Is it going to affect everything? Yes, it
Probably.
Is.
Probably.
Will it be really hard to move around in town? Yes, it will.
It might not be.
Or,
it'll
worse,
just be wet.
But I'm worried about the pass. That's what I'm worried about now.
Absolutely. You are driving to California
I
in
was
January.
Anyway. It's a great idea.
It's, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, we're talking about the Warner Brothers. This is part two.
Ooh.
When we last left the Warner Brothers, they had opened two successful movie theaters in Pennsylvania and realized that even more money could be made in film distribution.
That's right. Dude, I'm stoked. So, okay, at this point, it's what year? We're
1907.
Okay.
Good God, that's right. It's so long ago.
So long ago.
Dude. Okay.
Okay, let's strap in.
So it's 1907. The Warners sold their two theaters and moved to Pittsburgh. There, they founded their first distribution company, the Duquesne Amusement Supply Company. It was a success, so they opened up another in Norfolk, Virginia. After launching a movie newspaper, the brothers grew in notoriety, receiving agreements with over 200 producers to be the only ones permitted to distribute their films.
Hmm.
But this is where things go to shit.
Uh-oh.
America's number one party pooper, Thomas Edison, had something called the Edison Trust, more officially known as the Motion Picture Patents Company.
He sounds like he was kind of a pain in the ass. Everything
this is the
I've
first
heard about
I've
Edison.
I've heard of Thomas Edison being anything other than
the like, inventor of
light bulb
stuff.
Guy.
I think he's fine. I just like to call him a party pooper.
Yeah.
He's like, that's mine. I made it.
Yeah, I've just heard a lot that he was very difficult about patents.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, he invented it.
So, So the trust was a collection of several businesses that held ownership over film stock and filming equipment. By collecting all the various company patents together, Edison effectively had a monopoly over the business.
Right.
Supposedly, Edison would hire thugs to destroy movie sets because he felt that he owned the rights to any and all film made since he filed the first patent for the motion picture camera.
Okay, whoa. So he is a dick.
Yeah.
If the rumors are true.
That's mafia level thuggery.
The rumor is that this is the reason that the American movie industry is based out of Hollywood, because industry folks flocked to the other side of the country to get away from Edison's goons.
Ah.
And also it's 72 and sunny every day.
Yeah.
So you can film pretty much all year.
If it weren't for him, New Jersey or Pennsylvania might have been the heart of American cinema. Just imagine it.
Wow.
Probably not.
No, it never worked. Yeah.
Eventually, Edison's monopoly would be taken down in 1915 by another famous Jewish film mogul, William Fox. And that's a whole story unto itself that I might need to tell one day.
As in Fox.
Yeah. As in Fox.
As in...
Wow.
What is it? I can't even think of what the what rest of it is.
Fox. Studio Fox.
Yeah. It's been a bunch of things over the years.
Well, there's Fox News. That's the, like...
The news portion of it.
20th Century Fox.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's the studio.
Yeah.
That's the good side of Fox.
Right.
And then there's the, like, the cable... Media side that isn't so great.
Right.
Right.
So, alas, the brothers were forced to sell everything that they had worked so hard for to start from scratch again. But we all know by now that the Wansels don't give up that easily.
They sure don't. That's what we've always said about the Wansels.
We have.
From day one.
Mm-hmm.
From day one.
I get it. That's funny. The day one.
Wow.
James is truly enjoying this moment.
Now I'm just thinking of a Mexican named Juan. It's Day Juan.
Okay.
I amuse myself all day.
So after losing their distribution companies to Edison, the Warners knew that they needed to pivot, and created their first production company, which Harry opened in an old steel mill in St. Louis, Missouri. From there, the brothers began releasing movies with Sam and Jack as producers. But as it turns out, Missouri isn't actually the cinematic entertainment hub of America.
No. You don't say.
So the Warners moved to New York City.
It's always funny to me when people try to make areas like this a happening spot. You know, like, yeah, I've just been, you know, I work in film. I've been really trying. I just can't, like, catch a break. And I just can't wait for that to happen. And they live in the middle of nowhere.
Stop Missouri. Trying to make Missouri happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Like, I'm a stand-up comic. You know, I've just been really hitting the circuit. Like, oh, cool, where? Like, Cincinnati.
Kansas.
Yeah. Kansas. Lawrence. You're like, okay. Good luck.
By 1913, the movies that the Warner Brothers produced hadn't brought them any financial gain, even in New York. Around this time, producer Sam Goldwyn released Hollywood's first feature-length film, and the Warners, ever observant and always adaptable, decided to move the biz to Los Angeles. Harry and Albert stayed in New York to handle the finances, but Sam and Jack packed up their bags and headed to L.A., where they opened up offices and rented buildings and shooting halls.
So this is 1915-ish, 17?
1913.
13. Wow. God, what was Los Angeles even like then?
Well, Hollywood possessed neither glitz nor glam. There were practically no shops or restaurants, and wild animals such as coyotes and deer roamed into Tinseltown for food at night.
Crazy. It's hard to imagine.
Along with the literal continental divide between the Warner Brothers now, tensions began rising. Jack, the only brother that wasn't born in Poland, began referring to the other three as, quote, Polish fools, for what he considered to be a lack of creativity, while Sam picked up a gambling addiction and made some poor investments, draining the studio's funds.
Hell yeah. Sounds awesome.
Still, they hobbled along and pinched their pennies, and eventually they moved to the center of Hollywood. The brothers constructed the studio themselves, hiring some of their cast and crew to help out during filming breaks. Of course, finances were still in shambles, but the silver lining came in the form of a German shepherd, Rin Tin Tin.
As it often does.
Oh, wow.
Rin Tin Tin came to Tan... Sorry.
That's a tongue twister.
Rin Tin Tin. Rin Tin Tin came to Tinseltown.
That is a lot.
Rin Tin Tin to Tinseltown.
by way of a former army corporal who rescued him during World War I. With the war over, the man taught the dog a variety of different tricks, and by 1923, he crossed paths with the Warners. The veteran Good Boy starred in almost 30 films during the 20s and became one of the decade's most profitable stars, saving the Warners from financial ruin.
That's incredible.
He'd later be dubbed the Mortgage Lifter by Jack himself.
What? So the Warner Brothers empire is built off a dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
Pretty fun.
And there's no mention of the dog, by the way. You know?
I just mentioned him.
I'm saying you'd think that would be like a statue or something at the Warner Brothers studio.
There should be a statue. I agree with you.
There might be.
Tintin. There might be. That's true.
Well, although the doggo did his best to dig the Warners out of debt, times were still lean, competition in the film industry was booming, and the desperate Warners invested what little money they had left into a new technology, the radio.
Ah, the radio. Ah. Does this sound like old-time radio?
By 1925, they officially made their mark in the new industry by starting one of the first three radio stations in Los Angeles.
Cool.
Sam, the technologically innovative brother, who after all had the initial idea to purchase their film projector, suddenly saw the benefit of sound in entertainment. Mm. He came across Bell Labs, a research group inventing a sound system called the Vitaphone that allowed for dialogue to be synchronized with visual film images.
No way. We were just talking about this the other night. I think it was last night even. And, you know, I've talked about it on the podcast before. Like, the idea of people, how did they do anything before computers?
Mm-hmm.
I need someone to explain to me how they did anything. Not to mention things like film. You know, analog film where they spliced it and cut it. I guess they had little viewing machines. And now something like this explains how they could sync audio to an analog film. It's wild and a ton of work.
Yeah. But when Sam approached Harry about using the product, he reportedly quipped, "Who the hell wants to hear actors talk?"
Yeah, that's so crazy. Because silent films were the thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting take.
Yeah.
Sam knew that the future belonged to sound, but silent films were the gold standard in Hollywood, and few saw that changing at the time.
It reminds me of the... What's that movie?
It's
based off the show.
Yeah, sorry, I have it written down somewhere. It's Downton Abbey, A New Era,
the movie.
Right.
Yeah. Shout out to that because
they're
filming Hollywood film in the Abbey, and it's silent. But then, like during the course of it, they're like, "We need it to be sound because that's the new standard. Everyone's doing sound."
But the girl's voice is horrid,
just horrible,
so shrill, Cockney, and awful. It's adorable. It just doesn't fit.
No, she's supposed to be like an elegant woman. So good.
Sam was given a demonstration for the new sound-on-disc process that Western Electric had developed and was convinced that it would save the company. But first, he would have to convince his brothers. It was a tough sell, but Harry, the WB president, agreed to buy the invention if Sam would only use it for background music. And with that, Hollywood had taken its first baby step into sound production.
Cool.
Sam oversaw the production of several sound shorts, as well as Don Juan, the first sound feature, in 1926.
Wow.
The film had a recorded orchestra and used a few crude sound effects, so no speaking, just music and effects. Yeah.
So why would that be the compromise from his brothers? Like, music only, but we can't have talking actors?
Yeah, I'm telling you, at the time, no one thought that made any sense.
It's just, it was a novel, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Actors are for...
They're just stand
just
there.
Moving.
Yeah. Wild.
It was a huge hit, but it was unable to recoup the massive investment that the brothers found themselves in, so they were in debt again.
Right.
So they decided to push in all the chips and make a true talkie film. One where not only the background music would be heard on the soundtrack, but the voices of the actors themselves. And Sam was in charge of making it all happen.
So cool to hear these stories. Because, like, so often in these stories where, you know, in 2024, it seems like Warner Brothers has just always been there.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're making money hand over fist, and they are now. But they weren't And so often in business, at some point, that has to happen, where you push all the chips in, you have so much risk, and you don't know if it's going to work out.
And countless times it doesn't, and you don't hear about them.
Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty inspiring, though, when it does.
Far more don't work out than do.
Unfortunately.
So the result of this big gamble was The Jazz Singer, the first talkie, premiering on October 6th, 1927 in Manhattan. The film set box office records and effectively put the silent era on life support. It also secured WB's future and propelled the brothers into the ranks of the major film producers. Sadly, though, none of the brothers were able to witness history being made in person at the New York City premiere.
Wow.
Tragedy had struck.
Oh no.
Sam had been enduring horrible headaches throughout production that were later revealed to be a sinus infection.
Shit.
He kept putting off treatment and putting it off further, trying to see The Jazz Singer to completion, a dream that he had the utmost faith in. But his illness progressed as the film progressed, eventually spreading to his brain.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's not good.
He had to have ignored that for a long time.
Yeah. After four failed surgeries, Sam Warner died of cerebral hemorrhage on the operating table at only 39 years old.
Whoa.
Less than 24 hours before the film's premiere.
Holy shit.
He's the second youngest, right?
Yes.
And he was the one that was really pushing for innovation and...
Yeah. Wow. He's the one that pushed them the whole time, really. Yeah.
Especially with the technology side of things.
Yeah. It's a good thing they got The Jazz Singer going before he died. Yeah. If he hadn't pushed them, we probably wouldn't have a Warner Brothers.
No, very likely not.
The Warner Brothers faced a brutal blow with Sam's death. And if that wasn't enough, the first ever Oscars were held in 1929 and the Academy snubbed The Jazz Singer since they believed that the flick had an unfair advantage in a sea of silent movies. So instead, the Warners settled for a special Oscar for technical innovation.
Hmm.
After Sam's death, the rivalry between Jack and his surviving older brothers only intensified, particularly between Harry and Jack. Harry, the eldest brother, was known for his quiet reserve and professionalism, while Jack was the entertainer of the family, always craving attention. Later on, Jack's son claimed, "I think Jack would have shared power willingly with Sam," adding, "and Sam would have been able to mediate between Jack and Harry." So that missing link was just gone now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking that it even worked after Sam's death.
Yep. So the business plugged on with Jack running all day-to-day operations. But unfortunately, Tinseltown was changing. In 1930, the Motion Picture Production Code, better known as the Hays Code, was established, spelling disaster for production companies, the Warners included. The Hays Code was this self-imposed industry set of guidelines for all of the motion pictures that were released between 1934 and 1968.
Mm-hmm.
The code prohibited any sexually suggestive content and profanity on camera.
Wild.
Can you imagine?
And it was that was a government thing?
It was an industry thing.
It was like an industry
and
agreement.
Then like you had to do it.
Yeah. Right.
Movies from pre-code Hollywood were considered racy and indulgent, and with the Wall Street crash of 1929 emptying moviegoers' pockets, the movie industry wanted to attract the masses with edgier content itself. Mm-hmm. So how did the Warners get around the Hays Code? After all, they became famous for their gangster flicks during this time. They got around it by claiming that their movies showed audiences the risks of a life of crime.
Ah.
During their release of 1931's The Public Enemy, Harry declared that the movie's message was the following: crime does not pay. And as long as the bad guys don't have a happy ending, it's kind of okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
By the 1930s, Warner Brothers had officially become a respected production company, but by the time the 40s came around, their influence on the industry was beginning to decline. In 1947, Albert Warner acted on behalf of his brothers and signed the Waldorf Statement, a document responsible in part for, quote, the mass layoffs of those suspected of left-wing beliefs.
Oh, no.
So more,
Communist
Walt Disney,
scare.
Red Scare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. God, that's such a thing back then, huh?
So much a thing. 1947, I think that was the same year that Walt testified.
Wow.
From the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Thing I've never understood about the Red Scare is like what was the actual concern?
they were going to...
It's not a set of ideals I agree with.
They're going to influence the mass public to want to be more...
Communist.
Right.
Then so be it. I mean, this is a free country.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Far less free then. Although, I don't know. Never mind. I take it back. Yeah.
While none of the brothers interjected with him signing that statement, Jack began to resent his position within the company and yearned for more power. He assumed exclusive control of the company in the 1950s when he secretly purchased his brother's shares in the business after convincing them to participate in a joint sale of stocks.
Whoa.
Hostile so fucking shitty. Takeover.
Against his own brothers?
Yep.
Wow.
After Jack took control of the business in 1956, neither Harry nor Albert ever spoke to him again.
Oh, my God.
According to one biography, when Harry died of a heart attack followed by a brain hemorrhage just 2 years later, Harry's wife, Rhea, declared, "Harry didn't die. Jack killed him."
Oh, my God.
James, Ash, I hereby promise not to take over the podcast.
You're like, I'm too lazy to do that.
Far too lazy.
There's nothing to take over.
Well,
you can
not only will I not, I could not. Yeah. I wouldn't know what to do.
Right. I gotcha.
We should all pinky swear.
You guys do whatever you need to do for you. If you need to take it over from me, that is okay.
Right.
The relationship was so dire that Jack wasn't welcome to attend his elder brother's funeral. But would he have even come, even if he was invited? He declared to guests at his vacation home at the time, "I don't give a shit about Harry."
Jeez.
Wow. So, no.
That's so sad.
And that was according to the book Clown Prince of Hollywood, The Antic Life and Times of Jack L. Warner. I just really like that title.
Damn.
Clown Prince.
Wow.
That's James.
Yeah, I am a clown prince.
Apparently, he also, after saying that, he picked up a letter and then cruelly quipped, "But hey, look at this. It's a letter of condolence from President Eisenhower. Ain't that something?"
Wow.
Wow.
Kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, petty little shit.
Wow. That's insane.
Having severed all ties to his family, Jack began spending more time in his luxury villa in Cap-d'Antibes, France, although he finally succeeded in claiming what he believed was his rightful title to the Warner Brothers throne, he was alone. Yeah. Ironically, the studio began floundering under Jack's sole ownership, and in 1966, he sold it to Seven Arts Productions.
No.
Albert finally died a year later in 1967, still having never spoken with Jack again. Throughout his career, Warner was viewed as a contradictory and enigmatic figure. Although he was a staunch Republican, he encouraged film projects that promoted the policies of Democratic President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Which Warner are you talking about?
Jack.
Jack, okay.
He also opposed European fascism and criticized Nazi Germany well before America's involvement in World War II. Mm-hmm. An opponent of communism after the war, Warner appeared as a friendly witness before the House on American Activities Committee, voluntarily naming screenwriters who had been fired at the time as suspected communists or sympathizers.
Jeez.
Despite his controversial public image, Warner remained a force in the motion picture industry until his retirement. On November 14, 1966, and for reference, in Disneyland... Not Disneyland, the place, but Disney. Right.
Disney World. Wait, yes. No.
Disney Universe.
Disneydom. This is just 3 days after Walt's left lung was removed due to a recently discovered tumor and 1 month prior to his death. So it's all happening at the same time. Wow.
Okay. What a shift in the industry.
Yep. So on that time, November 4th, 66, Jack sold a substantial amount of his studio stock to Seven Arts Productions for $24 million, equivalent to $211 million today.
Damn.
8 months after the sale, Warner quipped, "Who would have ever thought that a butcher boy from Youngstown, Ohio would end up with 24 million smackers in his pocket?" Living in semi-retirement, he still tinkered around the business for years. By the end of 1973, those closest to Warner became aware of signs that he was becoming disoriented. Shortly after losing his way in his office building, Warner officially retired. Then in 1974, he suffered a stroke that left him blind and disabled. During the next several years, he gradually lost the ability to speak and became unresponsive to friends and relatives.
Oh, geez.
Finally, on August 13th, 1978, Warner was admitted to Cedars-Sinai Hospital, where he died of heart inflammation, edema, on September 9th at 86 years old.
Wow.
According to the Washington Post, he was considered the final first-generation film mogul.
Wow. That's so he was the last crazy. Of the brothers?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is... What a crazy story.
It's so, very depressing.
Do we know... Yeah. It is. Do we know who owns it now? Is it still the Seven Earths? There's no way, right?
I think it's changed several times since then.
Do we know if any of the Warner family is a part of it?
I don't.
Interesting. As to who owns the company, it's hard to say because it's just a huge conglomerate now. They have the Warner Studios, obviously, Warner Music Group, which I'm familiar with. I know people that work there. I've actually been to the office in LA.
Hmm.
And, you know, they own a ton of labels, even subsidiary labels under them. So, yeah, it's a huge thing now. God, it's crazy to think that, you know, immigrant family brothers from the other side of the country can move to LA, put everything in, and build something where only... I mean, I guess they were probably all wealthy by the end of all of their lives, but only one of them was like super duper wealthy. You know what I mean? It's
wild. And it
was
the cutthroat one.
Yeah, it was the one that axed his brothers.
And it's just weird when people, like, they spend all this time building something that they will never really even see.
Right.
At least not to the degree that it clearly is now. You think of Disney.
It's a bummer because, like, the first episode... It's like very dramatic and
yeah, like we're in this together.
Yeah, but yeah, they're all in it together.
Right.
And then it just
remind me of some of the works that they are responsible for.
Warner Brothers?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, you said some in the first episode.
And I know it's Harry Potter, right?
Yeah. So let's see. All the Harry Potters and Lord of the Rings, Dark Knight Rises,
yep.
Dark Knight.
I mean, those alone are like a humongous franchise.
Mm-hmm. Inception, Matrix. Mm-hmm.
Dune.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Crazy Rich Asians.
Such a good movie.
I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes, the top 10 rated Warner Brothers movies right now, just so you know.
They did Twister.
They did Paddington 1 and 2. They did Twister?
Uh-huh.
Hell yeah. Wonder Woman. Creed.
The Exorcist, The Terminator,
Mad Max Fury Road. They Batman, did The Terminator?
Yeah.
Which Batman?
The Batman. Tim Burton, motherfucker. Batman,
yeah. Edge of Tomorrow. Interstellar.
Yeah.
The Conjuring. Her. Remember the movie Her?
Oh, this is such a freaking weird movie.
Oh, my God. Gravity. Crazy movie.
Seven.
Seven?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Argo. Voice. The Hangover.
Argo Fuck Yourself.
Argo Fuck Yourself.
Zodiac. The Departed. Pan's Labyrinth.
Green Mile.
Dang.
Thief for Vendetta.
Lethal Weapon.
Okay. Letters from Iwo Jima.
Yeah, yeah.
300.
That's a lot.
Million Dollar Baby.
I feel like you said 300 a bunch of times.
The Notebook.
Definitely did not know had anything to do with Warner Brothers, but
yeah,
you know me too. I don't pay attention to anything behind the scenes. I watch it and then I immediately forget what it's called, who's in it.
The only studios I really know would be like, oh God, brain fart. The one where we go, something featured. We said it to each other.
Focus Features.
Focus Features. And
A24.
There you go. Blumhouse.
Yeah, no, these are...
They're like
are,
the horror movie.
I recognize these names. I couldn't tell you one thing that any of them are responsible
and
for.
And before Harvey Weinstein, the Weinstein
yeah.
company, they put out every Quentin Tarantino movie.
Mm-hmm.
All those movies we grew up with. Yeah. But other than that, it's like, I mean, there are a gazillion movie studios, especially these days. But there are Warner Brothers are still considered part of the top five.
Mm-hmm.
The big five, actually, is what they call them. And you can drive by it in Burbank. We have many times.
Yep, there's that it's water wild. Tower.
Yeah, it's the old school water
the
tower.
The water tower.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's huge. And it's just like you think it would be.
Speaking of towers...
Oh, yes.
Michelle sent us a picture today that, or did you send it?
Oh, that was me. Oh, okay. The Tiana's Tower is up.
Oh, at cool. Splash Mountain. I didn't see that.
And it looks cool. I mean, it's still, right it now. Looks like a mountain under construction, but yeah. The tower is up. Woohoo.
Oh, yeah, it is. Cute.
So we're excited about that.
When is that going to open? That's like 25 or so.
I heard it. The earliest would be the end of this year.
Okay. Well, hopefully we're still down in California when it's open.
Yeah, except it's going to be a madhouse for the first, I don't know, 6 months.
I know. Well, hey, speaking of California, before we move on to our recommendations and all that stuff, mm-hmm. we wanted to let y'all know, you loyal listeners that we adore, we are going to take just a little bit of a pause for the next couple weeks. Not cat pause. I'm saying time pause. Because Ashley and I and our four cats, speaking of cats, are doing this move that we've talked about. And we just need the time to get down there, to get settled in, and then come up with our format from there. We're not stopping the show. Sarah will still record her audio just like it sounds all the time. From her place, and then we'll do a little Zoom call with each other. But the audio, it should sound exactly like it's always sounded, and we'll pick back up weekly at the beginning of February.
Yes.
So, just so you know, this episode will come out Monday the something.
15th.
The 15th. So, after the 15th, be a short break until the beginning of February, and we'll try to put out a few, maybe some old episodes from back in the day. Deanna might do some highlights and BS like that. But yeah, so we love you and we hope your new year is going well. Shall we recommend some things?
Yeah.
Let's.
A movie I watched a few nights ago called Good Grief with Daniel Levy or Levy.
Really?
It's the story of him dealing with the loss of his husband.
Oh.
But
real?
No.
Oh, no. God. I was like, geez.
It's beautiful. It's super well done. The conversations are just very real feeling. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, but also there's just a lot of real human stuff going on in this film. And I highly recommend it. I think it was really, really well done.
Wow.
I'm excited to see him do more of this drama.
He's good.
He's so good.
He's incredible. Is this Netflix, you said?
Mm-hmm.
There's a Christmas movie that he's in that I can't remember the name of right now.
Yeah, I think I saw that, but I don't remember.
It's okay. It was okay, but he is great in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the story of a gay couple. He plays someone's partner. His partner is still in the closet and hasn't communicated to his family that he's in a relationship with this guy, Daniel Levy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to his partner's hometown and anyway, it's a Christmas movie.
I think I saw that. That sounds really familiar, but
it's very cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
It's
what a legend.
I like this too. Josh and I were talking about it after we finished it, that it's kind of nice to see these incredibly privileged people, because in the movie they are very privileged. Mm-hmm. They're very wealthy. There's no question about it. They aren't having to go out and do the grind like
they
we
grow up
necessarily
like we
do. But then to see them have to deal with the same kind of grief that anybody does.
Of course.
And it's like,
yeah,
it brings a human element to mm-hmm. it where, you know, it's a good reminder that every person, rich, poor, you know, whatever is going on in your life,
you're still human.
You're still a human being.
You can still get cancer.
Yep.
You still grieve loved ones. You still want to be loved.
And nothing is exactly as it seems.
No. Oh, God. That's right. That's something that took me a long time.
Yeah.
You know, comparing your life to others
is so
pointless.
Yes.
Another thing I'm realizing is that age, like, I'm so hard on myself. Ashley, she's a saint for dealing with me, but I'm constantly saying I should be farther than I am by now. At this age, I should have accomplished X.
No such thing.
It's so pointless and it doesn't mean anything.
Nope.
If you're alive, then that's enough. That's all that matters. It's never too late to try something. It's never late to change.
Mm-hmm.
Or too late to change. So, yeah. That's a good point, sir.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out. I have two little actually three. How about that? Huh? Oh. Okay. Ash,
yeah.
I told you the other day that I had a new, weird sport to share with you guys.
Great. Mm-hmm. I can't wait.
I came out shouting about it. And she said, don't tell me. Save it for the podcast, she
said. It's not chess boxing?
No, that was last week.
God, I forgot to show that to Josh. What the hell?
This is called Mallakhamb. It's okay. Indian.
Okay. So that's why you are the skinny Indian man wearing on a diaper? Pole.
Yes.
On a pole.
So it's basically...
I'm looking this up. How do you spell it?
Pole, Mallakhamb.
Okay, I found it.
There's an Instagram account, Mallakhamb_heroes.
Okay.
Or you can just type in Mallakhamb on YouTube. It's Jesus, basically James. Gymnastics on a wooden pole. And then they also have a version where the wooden pole is hung by a rope, so it's swinging. And then there's another version where it's just a rope. And, like, check this out.
He's standing on a pole in
so he, that's a dismount.
Okay. He flipped off the pole.
And then there's, like... That's a girl.
Okay. So it's... Oh, my God. How? It's extreme pole dancing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's the rope version.
Okay, so it's like aerial acrobatic pole dancing.
Yeah. But some of these are
gymnastics.
Gymnastics, yeah.
Crazy. Look at that guy.
No.
He's like planking at the top of a pole.
Look at his nuts.
Look at his nuts.
It's like the pole's gonna go right up his tush.
Imagine practicing these moves.
Dude, and it's like college level gymnastics. They're like D1 colleges in India that compete with each other. It's incredibly hard, as you would imagine. Yeah, it's like Sarah said, it's extreme pole dancing, but they're not like seductively spinning. Yeah. No. They're doing like legit gymnast moves on a pole.
That is
wild.
Vertical.
That's vertical. Yeah, it's a whole thing there. It's one of the oldest sports or something.
That's cool.
Hundreds and hundreds of years ago, it was a thing. And then the British Empire, you know, they tried to get rid of a lot of those original Indian things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bringing it back now. So it's
good.
It's like Gaelic sports in Ireland, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
You should start an Instagram just for your crazy...
My curations?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Weird just sports. Like whatever weird crap you're into and in the moment.
Dude, my algorithm's nuts.
I'm sure it is.
It's insanity. It's like Disney. It's motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
People getting hurt.
People getting hurt.
Animals.
Animals. Not cute animals. And then this weird shit.
So that is... Exactly Josh's algorithm without the Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty close to mine, too. Minus the motorcycles.
I'm a curious person. Okay, another thing I found is a YouTube video. I'm trying to pull it up here. So if you just type, like, rare look behind the scenes at Disney jail or something like behind the scenes at Disney jail on YouTube, you'll probably find this.
Okay.
And it's on the channel called Cop Cam Videos.
Oh, fun.
So, it's not very pleasant, but it's the police department, the sheriff department at Walt Disney World has to come in and arrest a guy who was, you know, doing... So he, like, shoulder-checked a cast member or something, and she wanted to press charges on him.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I wanted to talk about it is it gives you an idea of, like, what they do to... get someone out of the park. Mm-hmm. They come up with Disney security and armed sheriffs, like the department for the county, and they tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't move, so they cuff him on Main Street, walk him to the Disney jail. There's an actual behind-the-scenes area where they put him in a room, they read him his rights, a Disney person comes in with a contract, has him sign it, that says he's banned from all Disney parks. It's wild.
Wow.
Yeah, so that, I just kind of thought that was cool that there really is a Disney jail. at Disneyland and Walt Disney World. And if you fuck around, they're going to put you in it. I was a little let down that there wasn't a Mickey in a cop outfit. Yeah,
you mess with the mouse, you get the ears.
Get the ears. He reads you your rights. Dude. Okay, and then real quick, my actual content pick, other than Malakam, is a series that Ashley and I just finished.
Oh, boy.
There's two seasons on HBO. Sorry, Max, whatever. It is called, it's a docuseries called The Curious Case of Natalie Grace.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Really?
It is bonkers. Dude, it's the craziest shit I've ever seen. Hey, it's the craziest story I've ever heard. It's a little, okay.
Curious it's about case a, of Natalie Grace. Okay.
There's a very bad up. Horror movie that was made prior to this story called The Orphan.
Okay.
So it's sort of like in parallel with that. So, okay, this girl, she's a dwarf. She has dwarfism and then also another condition. I don't remember the name of it. It makes her just all jacked up. So she kind of has a weird way of walking. Her feet are kind of mangled and it's miserable. And on top of that, she's a little person. Anyway, so she, as a little girl, is adopted from Ukraine to an American family. Mm-hmm. First family gets rid of her.
Okay.
And they say, like, she's just crazy and they don't want her. And then a second family adopts her. They say the same stuff.
Oh, I remember hearing
it's a very
about
famous
this.
Story.
It's
but
insane.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the second family is the one that you will hate. Mm-hmm. The parents, the adopted parents, are awful.
Yeah.
Guilty of child neglect. The mom is a lunatic. She claimed that this little girl, who's obviously a little girl, like 5 years old, is an adult. She's pretending to be an adult.
And trying to kill everyone.
And trying to kill everyone. And so she and this guy, husband, they get her re-aged legally to a 22-year-old on paper. Then
get her an apartment.
They get her an apartment, abandon her. So now at this point, she's an 8-year-old girl, also with disabilities, and they leave her in an apartment to fend for herself.
I totally remember this, but I feel like I remember it being flipped where she was older and pretending to be younger. But,
well,
oh my God. Okay. Nope.
Okay. So it just gets crazy from there. Okay. She's so damaged that, like, she's also fucked.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't do that. You know, it's a whole.
Yeah. Okay.
The whole story.
The most insane part is the dad, though. And he is
the most infuriating person you'll ever hear.
There's so much screen time with him, and he's fucking nuts.
Nuts.
I can't wait.
Unhinged, overacting. He can't just answer a question.
And he has to sit like this.
He's always like holding himself and just sobbing. And we couldn't do anything. And my wife wouldn't
let me. Is he still alive?
Yes. Yep.
How?
Yes. Yeah. And not in prison somehow.
And here's what I'm going to say. So the first season is all about, it's like the whole thing. Like, and this is all stuff that I had known because I'm a true crime.
And it starts with their perspective. Him saying she was crazy. She had
And James is like, wow, I mean, that's a weird thing to do.
She walked around with a knife.
That's kind of weird.
She tried to kill my kids.
And then the second season
is the girl's perspective.
It's her perspective.
She's like, fuck no, I can't even reach over this. And how do you, I was five. I had a knife in the room. What? You know,
It's
her perspective.
And all I'm going to say is that you haven't watched it unless you've watched through the credits of the second season.
Okay.
Because there's an epilogue.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yes. So,
a little Easter egg.
Finish it. Do you have Max?
Yeah.
Dude, just strap in.
Yeah, you're
and enjoy.
Welcome.
You'll just be like yelling at the screen.
I can't wait.
It's wild. Dude, and by the second season, it fully crosses into Jerry Springer.
Yeah,
man.
We were like, we kept saying, let's watch some more Jerry,
because it just gets crazier and crazier.
It's like, let's get them in the room together, and they'll confront each other.
And you just know that, because you know me, I'm always thinking of the production of something, and I'm thinking of the producers and the people in the room. They must just go and high-five each other. Like, this is the craziest shit ever on camera.
Right.
And we have hours of this psycho talking. This is going to be gold. All right. Well, enjoy that.
I am excited.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, hey, you've got two seasons of content to binge.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. Like I said, we love you, and we're just going to take a short break, a couple weeks, and we'll
hold
be back.
On now.
Oh, what?
I have Animal Heroes.
What am I doing?
What are you even doing?
What am I doing? I'm like out of practice before we're even stopping.
I know. This doesn't bode well.
Jeez. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. I have two Animal Heroes of the Week. They're both dogs. The first one is obviously Rin Tin Tin.
Yeah.
He's a war hero and a veteran, and he saved the Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers would not exist today without this beloved doggo.
Wow. A true star.
What yes. a guy.
And he has a fascinating life story, which I'm like, really? Oh, there is a biography of him. I'm going to read it. and then James reminded me of Roselle the dog, who was a dog hero on 9/11.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, this dog.
And just from an Instagram thing, it says, a guide dog named Roselle led a group of people, including her blind owner, down 78 flights of stairs before the North Tower collapsed on 9/11.
Oh, my God.
She only stopped to give kisses to a woman who was having a panic attack.
And it fell like 12 minutes after she got everyone out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God.
But she's a good yellow Labrador, and she's a hero.
She's a hero.
I've known about her for a long time, but it's always a good time to celebrate Roselle.
Yeah.
And look at her face.
She's a good girl.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good girl face right there.
Yeah.
I love the exploding building behind her good girl face.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little Sheesh. Ominous. Almost looks like she's responsible.
It looks like
for
she's.
It.
That'd be the lamest and kind of cutest conspiracy theory
yeah.
ever.
that I Roselle, think Roselle did
down
it.
Down the Twin Towers.
well, anyway, as I was saying before I forgot about the last segment, yeah, we've enjoyed this entire experience, and we can't wait to pick it back up in February.
Yep, it will go by in a flash.
Oh, boy, will it.
Because they're going to be super, super busy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be doing the same thing I always do.
Yeah.
And,
but we'll be closer to Disneyland.
You will. Yeah, you will.
You three out of four. Three out of four. Wow. Three out of two out of three. Wow. Three out of three. Idiot. Fucking mashed potatoes for brains.
We're not sleeping much these days.
God.
God, mashed potatoes sounds so good.
So good.
Have you seen that video of the girl? She's like showing you her meal or something. That part doesn't matter. She has a spoon and a fork.
Uh-huh.
And she's talking about the food. And then she says, and you take she calls the spoon like a spoon or something. She can't say spoon or fork.
Oh,
right?
This is a child.
No, it's an adult lady.
Uh-huh. Oh.
She keeps just saying it wrong. She's like, ah, God. I'm sorry, my spork. I mean, goddamn it. And it goes on for so long where she can't get the words right. And it just gets funnier and funnier and funnier. She finally just gives up. Like, just, I'm done. That's it. Oh my God, do I identify with this woman?
Oh. I was like Ash trying to say Rin Tin Tin of Tinseltown.
Rin Tin Tin of Tinseltown.
Rin Tin Tin of Tinseltown.
All right, well, we love
well,
you.
Well, yeah. Thanks for listening to another episode of Disney Dependent.
See you real soon. In February. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Disney Dependent.
And you can send us an email at DisneyDependent@gmail.com.
This podcast is produced by Producer Ash.
The logo is by Ryan Hatch, and you can find him at WRHatch on Instagram. The music is by Ryan Knowles, and you can find him at Ryan Allen Knowles on Instagram.
This show is mixed and edited by Deanna Chapman. You can find Deanna at Deanna_Chapman. And this has been a Team Dynamite Goat production. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll be back here next week.